And welcome to Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Jeff Fiegels. I'm Lance Meadow. Good to be with you for the next 60 minutes as we'll look ahead to today's walkthrough practice. We'll go over some of the standouts from yesterday's practice and recap the pressers. Ben McAdoo spoke to the media as well. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. Jeff, how are we doing today?
I'm doing good. Got a little excited to come into the building today, but realize that it's a walkthrough practice. So
that the energy level went down.
Yeah, you know what, though? I mean, as a player, that you like that. I mean, you went 3 days of pretty good grind, and now it's just kind of a, you know, recuperation day. And it's good for the players. When I pulled into the complex this morning, I realized that something was going on because there was no one in the parking lot. There was no cars in the parking lot when I pulled in here. I said, oh, there must be – the practice is either not happening today or it's delayed or something. Well, now I know. It's a little later schedule.
A little later, yeah.
Guys can get a little rest. I know that Coach McAdoo likes to get the guys to sleep in a little bit because we know that rest is important, especially this time of the year where the guys – but other than that, I'm doing good. How about you, Lance?
That is good to hear. I can't complain.
Good.
Glad to be aboard with you. Rest and recovery, as you mentioned, Jeff, is a big theme. Big theme throughout the course of training camp as Ben McAdoo tried to get in some extra rest days throughout the course of the schedule. And they're going to have an intense practice on Saturday, and then they're going to have a day off on Sunday. So that's part of the thinking today, to not have it as intense because you've got to have to get ready for tomorrow to be an extensive practice as well as an extremely physical practice.
And, you know, they'll get a lot of meeting time today and start to, you know, look at stuff. But I tell you one thing that happens in training camp, you don't look back. So there's not a lot of, you know, 2 days ago you're looking at this. It's you're looking at your last practice. You're looking forward to the next one. They'll get a lot of stuff, a lot of corrections and things like that today at this practice. Install some new things because tomorrow is going to be an up-tempo practice, as you mentioned, so that they'll get in their meetings and really look forward to getting some stuff done tomorrow in pads. I imagine it's in pads.
Yeah.
That's kind of good. It's a Saturday. Just make sure that you, you know, check the weather and things like that if you're going to come out here. And, you know, everybody, just so you know, that if something happens with the weather, they have to cancel practice. They go inside the field house, and that's not open to the public. They can't put a lot of people in there. So hopefully the weather gods are there for you and the fans, and you can come out and watch the Giants practice.
Now, as far as yesterday's practice, Ben McAdoo gave an update on Sterling Shepard, and this is what he had to say. He said, quote, he was sore, was a little stiff when he woke up, but we sent him for an MRI. So he's undergoing further testing, but there's optimism, just as much optimism as there was the day before when he suffered the injury, that it's just a rolled ankle, it's a sprain, and they don't think he's going to miss extensive time. Sterling Shepard actually went on Twitter the other day, and he tweeted out the following, quote, appreciate all the love, can't wait for a big season, hashtag Big Blue, end quote. So it seems as if, Jeff, they hopefully avoided a really severe injury, and they dodged a bullet here.
Well, I mean, everything is precautionary at that point when they're taking the guy off the field and, you know, and getting him treatments and stuff. I will tell you this, as we all know, that the high ankle sprain is the one you want to stay away from. That is the one that can last for, you know, weeks upon months. And this is good news. So I think that they'll get him in the treatments. They'll get him to start rehabbing the ankle and doing the things he's got to do to get back on the field and not rush him back. I know he's only a second year player, but the fact is that anytime you're not on the field getting reps, it does hurt a little bit of a progression. But because he's been around the system already, he knows what's going on. He'll be in meetings. And more importantly, he'll be in treatments. When you're hurt in training camp, you live in the training room. I'm telling you, you're there probably 4 or 5 times a day getting treatments on whatever specific injury you have, because they really, two things. They want to get you better. They also want to make you understand that, you know, if you're going to get hurt, you are going to spend your life in this training room.
So don't get
hurt. We want you to hate it to the point where I do not want to be in here anymore. I want to go back on the field. And that's the truth. I'm telling you, it's just, you see some of these guys and, you know, every time you turn around, they're on the treatment table. They got ice. They're getting stem. They're getting all this treatment stuff. So you don't want to be in there for obvious reasons. But for the one reason you do want to be in there is to get better and get back on the field.
Well, it looks like another wide receiver, though, is going to be entering the training room, and that is because Tavares King, who's had a golden opportunity with Shepard sideline, he wound up rolling his ankle on a punt return yesterday. Once again, not necessarily anything severe, but that means another wide receiver is going to be sidelined.
It's kind of ironic because, you know, over the years, I've realized that these injuries, they kind of they take on a bigger. It's like, is this going to be the year of the ankle? I mean, it's the year of the shoulders, and yeah, it just seems to me like sometimes that this is like a plague. All of a sudden, one guy gets hurt with an ankle, and next thing you know, there's three or four guys. So you just hope that you nip that in the bud right away. But Tavares King, yeah, I mean, the guy he's wanting every chance he can to get. When somebody goes down or is not in practice, you got to step up, be that next man up, and go out there and try to compete. Unfortunately, things happen like this, and then again, you got to get back in the training room and get your butt back out on the field as quickly as you can. But when one guy goes down, and even Tavares King is a veteran, that gives an opportunity for some of the younger guys to get in there.
Like a Darius Powell, for example. Yep. Roger Lewis is another one. Though King was making a lot of good plays before his injury, so he certainly has picked up where he left off in that Packers playoff game. Also on the injury front, Keenan Robinson is now in concussion protocol. Shane Vereen and Devin Taylor were dealing with soreness, though Ben McAdoo indicated that they should get back worked into practice today. They're at least hopeful from that standpoint. As far as the players that are actually healthy and on the field, I think so far, since they put the pads on, Jeff, the one guy that's jumped out to me is B.J. Goodson. I mean, he seems to want to hit everything. He's not holding back. He's
the middle linebacker.
There you go. He's got that mentality, and also he's hungry, and he can anticipate. He's got a golden opportunity with that starting job up.
Hey, and all the power to him. Yeah. I mean, listen, in today's game, you know, they don't hit as much as they did in the past, but you can't take the football out of a football player. I mean, the guy wants to play some football. The one thing he does have to learn is that he is young, and he has to learn how to practice. A lot of the veteran guys do not like guys that come around here and just do cheap shots and things like that. So, you know, word of caution, just be careful of what you're doing. But I you got to like the intensity. You got to like his attitude. And from a middle linebacker's position, that's the way you want to be. You got to have a guy like that. And really, it sounds to me like he's taking on that leadership role at that position. You know, you got Castillas in there, who's probably the leader of the linebacker crew in Kennard. But to have a young guy come in here and doing what he's doing, it's an amazing thing. And listen, I think that they're projecting him to be that middle linebacker, and he's got to prove that he can be the guy. And I think that he wants to go out there and show the veterans, hey, listen, I'm not messing around. I'm here to play. I'm here to work, and I'm here to help us win.
Well, you bring up an interesting point, Jeff, because you said a lot of the veterans, they don't want to maybe get as physical throughout training camp, but they have to relate and understand that they were in the shoes of B.J. Goodson at one point, who was anxious to make the team and anxious to win a starting job.
No, it's just a crotchety old vet. The guy that's just, come on, young buck. You're going to hit me like that? I mean, the problem is that nowadays – it's so looked down upon you got to take care of each other. But it is football. Okay, so and really, when you go into a drill, a half line 9-on-7 drill, whatever it is, you can't go in there thinking, okay, I'm just going to, you know, we hear the word thud. Thud is a term that's used around the National Football League that means basically hit but don't tackle. And thud is thud. It's the true definition. Thud. It's a hit. All right. So some guys have to understand the difference between thud and maybe a little bit more than thud. And I think that BJ likes a little bit more than thud. So that if you're a lineman or somebody that's taking on a linebacker sometimes and you're in a thud mentality, you got to just make sure you keep your head up and you know, be prepared to play some football. And I think that the guys don't mind it as much, but they just sometimes it's the repeated. If it keeps going on and on, then they get a little – that's where the fights start.
Of course.
Because, listen,
chippy.
I'm telling you right now, if it's hot out there, there's probably something that sparked that before it actually happened. One of the two guys, you know, cheap shot of the guy in the play before,
it builds up to it.
So, and listen, I remember years and years ago when football was two-a-days and these guys would come out and hit in the morning and hit in the afternoon – they're just the patience level and just the guys just were not, they're just not in a good mood, you know, and just things happen, especially when it's hot out. And but it's fun to watch. It's fun to watch.
Yes. Well, as long as nobody gets hurt.
Well, that's just it. Yeah.
Safe on the sidelines under those circumstances. You brought up B.J. Goodson and that thud mentality. Ben McAdoo, I thought, had a great quote when he was asked about Goodson yesterday. He says, quote, it's a thud tempo, and BJ is good at thudding.
Well, see, thudding is plural for thud, right?
It's a little bit further than thud.
He's good at thudding. Yeah.
Yeah. So. It's where to draw the line between, as you mentioned, thudding and then perhaps however you want to take it further.
But that's all these guys can do. It's really limited. There is no tackling. And you see, if you see some film, and some clips on whatever you're watching, social media, whatever, you see this little rolling donut. That's the tackling that they do, okay? They work on form tackling. They work on hitting dummies and things like that. They don't work on hitting individuals, and that's why you see in preseason games and even into the first couple weeks of the NFL regular season, the tackling in the National Football League is horrendous at first, because these guys really are not getting any types of true tackling on the field. They do not want to bring guys to the ground in training camp. That's where guys get hurt. So they eliminate that. It's just a thud. So a thud for all the people watching and listening is it's a come up, you hit, and then you release. It's a thud. It's like, you know, banging your head against the wall.
Quick process.
Yeah,
yes.
Quick. Just boom. That's it.
To the point.
Yeah.
Nice to see that spare tires are utilized.
Well, they're soft. They're soft spare tires.
Well, they're a little softer, of course.
And they're a lot larger than spare
tires. Yes, exactly.
They're like truck tires.
Unless you're driving a monster truck, correct, yes.
Yeah, but it is. You see them rolling around, and it's form tackling. Listen, these guys all know how to tackle. They just, you know, over time, when you're not doing it a whole lot, you lose a little of the perspective of how to do it. And I think you do see in the regular season, you see a little – what's happening in the preseason when you don't do a lot of tackling, it carries over for a little while.
Yeah, bad habits.
Bad habits.
The last thing you want is to then carry that over to the regular
season. Yeah, and the little donut thing is to develop good habits and good fundamentals of head up, see what you hit, wrap up, things like that, and that's what you work on.
201-939-4513, that is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. He's Jeff Eagles, I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for tuning in to Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Let's open up the phone lines. Brian is in Hoboken. Brian, welcome to the program. What do you have for us?
Hello, gentlemen. How are you today?
Wonderful. Well, Brian.
What's going on, Brian?
You guys are the big brain, so I'm going to stick with some questions as opposed to making comments about things I don't really know much about.
okay.
We'll try to answer.
We are all ears.
What's that?
We are all ears, I said. We're ready.
So let's start with, do you think B.J. Goodson is going to be a three-down linebacker? And it's a tough one, but what are your thoughts?
I think that is a tough question. I really do. I think that we're going to see in preseason. The beauty about preseason is to try to answer a lot of the questions like your own. You know, can he be a three-down linebacker? I think a lot of it's going to determine on the matchup and who the personnel is on the other side of the ball.
Yeah, I think that's going to dictate an awful lot. To just make a generalization that he'll always be in on that third down, I think it depends on what the opposing tight ends are, the wide receivers. Will Spags want to throw in an extra safety? Will he throw in an extra corner? And we really need to see what Goodson can do in coverage. Remember, he played 13 defensive snaps last season. I think what he's given a taste of in the early stages of training camp is he's not going to shy away from coming down in the box, filling the holes, and helping in the run game. As far as coverage, I don't think we've really seen enough to make a judgment about whether or not they'd be confident to throw him out there.
Okay. Thank you for that. The next quick question, how good do you think – I just don't get a feel for it at all Robert Thomas can be. I mean, it sounds like he's a big run stuffer, but have we seen enough out of him yet to know whether or not he can – really take that role on as the defensive tackle next to Snacks?
Go ahead.
You want?
I'll tell you from what I've been watching in camp, I've liked what I've seen out of Robert Thomas so far. I know Spags has spoken highly about him this camp. I know that last year he was, you know, banged up, illness, whatever you want to call it. But I think that now he's back in the rotation, and I think that they're putting a lot of guys in there to see who can play next to Snacks. And I think that Tomlinson is a guy that you're going to see. If he, you know, whether he doesn't start this year or early in the season, I do think that he will be in that rotation. But I think Robert Thomas is having a good camp, and I think that he can fill that position.
And the other thing about Thomas that I think gets overlooked, he flashed in the second half of the season, Jeff. He didn't have a huge role, but when he went in, he did provide some pressure. He, like you said, is a big presence to help stop the run. He's got more versatility than I think he's given credit for, and he is a veteran. He's been with a few teams in the NFL. I've said this from the get-go. Even though Tomlinson is the attractive selection, if you look at the track record of previous second-round picks, they've actually not started right away. Linval Joseph and Jonathan Hankins did not become starters day one. So I think he's going to follow the same script as those two. I think Thomas is going to get his opportunities in early, and then by the later part of the season, I could see Tomlinson filling in more of a rotational role with Snacks.
I agree.
Okay. Makes sense. One other quick question. My thought is, the little I saw him on TV, it looks to me like Tavares King has a lot of speed, but when when I'm listening to and reading the reports, it sounds to me like he's more of a sneaky, quick. I don't hear a lot about his pure speed, although it seems to me I see it on TV. Is my eye off? When you watch him live, how do you define him as his skill set?
I think he's got some really good speed. He's quick off the ball. I think that, you know, he can get down the field and stretch the field. We saw him catch some balls like that last year, and I think that's what that's his skill set. I really do.
Okay. That's all I had for you, gentlemen. I wish I had something more interesting.
No worries. Appreciate it. Those
that's
are all
fine,
good,
Brian.
Good questions.
We appreciate it. Thanks so much for weighing in.
All right, have a good weekend.
When it comes to Tavares King, his MO is he's a vertical threat.
Exactly.
And if you go back to that play that he made in the Packers playoff game, Jeff, what did he do? He just really ran by his defender. Eli hit him straight over the middle, and then he caught the touchdown. So that's what he essentially has been known for throughout his career, and that's what I think we're getting a glimpse of in training camp. It would be interesting to see, especially now that Sterling Shepard is a bit banged up, will they try to toy with him a little bit more, Jeff, to maybe see if they could utilize him and line him up in different spots? Because I would think this would be the time to do something like that. Even if you don't think he has a great deal of versatility,
sure,
you would at least maybe think about doing something like that.
I think he's better off on the outside, and I think that some of the personnel, actually some of the different formations, as you'll see as we've seen it, is that seeing Beckham come into the slot and play a little bit more slot, which makes sense more to me. Because I think Tavares King is a guy that can stretch the field, take that corner with him, maybe a safety over the top, and then that's where an Ingram or somebody in the slot comes underneath. So I think he's better off outside, but you're right. Maybe they start to tinker a little bit with it and see what he can do in the slot position.
And they have moved players around, but you bring up a good point. When Shepard went down, Beckham immediately moved to the slot, and then King came in on the outside. Then they asked King after that, well, does this mean that you essentially are considered the fourth wide receiver right now if you were the first man up? And he said, listen, I've been in this league long enough to realize nothing's guaranteed, and you don't necessarily pencil yourself into the depth chart. But I think if anybody on the back end I think has a good chance because of what he showed late in the season to make the team, I think it's Tavares King, Jeff, more so than maybe Roger Lewis or somebody else.
Well, I think that, you know, when you talk about Dwayne Harris, he's another guy that was in there. And, you know, when Shepard went down, he was inserted into that offense. Another veteran, a guy that understands the offense, would like to see him on special teams more than a receiver. But I think that when you talk about Roger Lewis and Tavares King and Darius, is it Poe?
Powell. Potato.
I think that those guys are competing for those three guys are competing for two spots, and I think that, you know, you throw those three guys in there, I think they all have a good shot at making the team. I think that, you know, probably Darius might be the guy that's probably the longest shot, but I look at, you know, Roger Lewis and King, I think it's going to come down to those two guys.
Powell was on the practice squad last season, and it's also interesting from seeing what's going on at training camp. We mentioned King rolled his ankle, but he rolled his ankle on a punt return. And remember, he was inactive last year at times because he didn't contribute on special teams. Notice you could tell he's trying to make sure that he's more well-versed in that regard, so this way he betters his chances to make the team.
Well, listen, when you are one of those back end of the roster guys, you know, a fourth, maybe a fifth or sixth receiver, a fourth or fifth linebacker, you look at where's your bread and butter. It's on special teams, because that's how you're going to make the team. You're not going to make it as a receiver per se. Your duty to the team is going to be on special teams. So that's, you're right. He's got to go. These guys got, look at a guy like Travis Rudolph. Okay, a guy comes in here who, you know, you look at this receiving core and say, how can I fit into this? You fit in on special teams. And Paul and I talked about the other day that, you know, his coach at Florida State had told him, when you go to the Giants, you specifically got to go there in the mindset of playing special teams and being a standout on that. That's how you're going to make the team as a fifth receiver.
Because his coach, we had him on the program, Jeff, he mentioned they didn't utilize him on special teams because, you know, in college they want to preserve
these
guys.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so they're not going to have it. But the problem is, a star in college, then all of a sudden becomes the fourth wide receiver, the fifth wide receiver in the NFL. So now you have to play specials.
And you look at a guy like Jeremy Davis, okay? He was a guy that came in here and, you know, he never played special teams in college because he was the guy. But the sooner these guys realize this, and it's at any position, it could be a defensive lineman, a linebacker, a safety, you got to understand what your role is coming in, okay? Very few, unless you're a first, second round draft pick, a lot of these guys are street free agents. They're coming in to try to make a team. You're going to make it on special teams first, okay? That's when you're going to have to learn the playbook. But the fact is, learn your special teams playbook first, because that's where you're going to make hay. And that's the bottom line. And there's so many veterans that could tell the young guys this, and none of them listen. They want to think that they're going to come in and take Odell Beckham's job. Well, that ain't happening, okay? That's not happening.
Wishful thinking.
Stupid thinking. If I'm a young guy, I'm going to be all over Tom Quinn asking him what I can do to contribute to make this team. And he's going to tell you, get on all the big four, kickoff return, punt return. You get on any of those teams and you play your butt off. That's how you're going to make the team.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We have Bam Bam in an undisclosed location.
Bam Bam,
what's happening?
I gave him a location, I guess.
Is it Bedrock?
Okay.
Maybe Bedrock?
Guys, first off, great coverage throughout camp. Appreciate the show.
Well, thanks for tuning in.
Get to do the work day here. Unfortunately, this is another Eric Flowers calls, and I'm sure you guys are tired of taking them. But one thing that kind of bothers me about the coverage of Mr. Flowers here is, particularly from, like, Giants guys, the Papas, the Dottinos. I was really hoping Paul would be on the show today. He went on a rant yesterday about Flowers and how the drills they do are geared towards the defense, and he's getting used to pads, and he's getting hitting, and we've heard all about how he slimmed down. There's been nothing but excuses for this kid since the day he got here. His first year he was hurt. Last year, you know, he was adjusting to the scheme. He's still young. He's slimming down. At what point are we just going to call a spade with this kid and say he's flat out stunk so far? And there's little that's happened in training camp thus far that would say anything has changed so far with his play.
Well, the third year is always the most important year, Bam Bam. And I understand, and I'm not trying to sell you on the fact that this is going to be an unbelievable turnaround campaign. But, you know, no matter what you see in training camp, and it has been limited in fairness, you still need to wait and see what happens in games before I think we make true judgments about whether or not his work in the offseason has truly translated to the field. Because, you know, even drills against your teammates, you know, what happens in a lot of these drills is they even know who the defender is that they're going to be going up against. A lot of it is not unknown, and a lot of it is, you know, more of the interaction between the offensive player and the defensive player and learning technique and learning tendencies. But until you apply it against guys that you don't know and you're not familiar with, it's really hard to tell how much progress has truly been made. So I'd say let's see what happens in the preseason. Let's see what happens in the regular season. And then I think we can better have the conversation about, is this where we draw the line, or is there a little bit more leeway that should be given?
That's a fair point. I do appreciate it. But I just feel like they talk about these drills the other day. They showed the team going through drills. You see a lot of it on, like, training camp live.
Yeah.
And you see him getting shoved around and pushed around. And it's always like an excuse. There's always a reason why. He's adjusting. But I don't see these things happening to, like, Pugh or Richburg. You don't read about them from some of the training camp reports. It always seems to be Flowers. And if this were his first year, you'd say fine. But this is a continuation of what we've seen for the last couple of years. So it always seems like we're just, we got to wait to the games. But we've seen what happens in the games already. At this point, we should expect him to be bad and hope that he's good.
Well, you could do that. I think the expectations here, and I think what you have to look at when it comes to Eric Flowers, is you can't change a zebra's stripes, okay? So he has deficiencies in certain areas. We know he's a big guy. We know that he's the starting left tackle. We all know that. I think what we have to take a look at is that there's going to be some things he's working on, and he hasn't been able to work on correcting those until he gets into camp and works on them. He can't work on them in OTAs. He can't work on them in the weight room. So I think, and it's going to sound like another excuse to you, but I think the fact is that let's watch him through training camp. Watch him. If we had a list of things that he was working on, it'd be a lot easier that we could maybe focus on those things. But I have a feeling that Mike Solari, the offensive line coach, has given him a set of things that he has to improve on. And some of these techniques that he has to do, he's working on those. It's just like if you and I were working on something else, it's not going to come right away because obviously there was a deficiency in what he was doing. So they're trying to correct it, which means he's going to have to get reps to do it. That the full tail sign here is going to be when the games come around and we can't wait to watch him play. And we just hope that he is improved from what he did last year because he knows he has to. The team knows he has to. And so does Eli. He needs him to play better.
Well, guys, I appreciate you letting me vent. I'm going to leave on this.
All right.
Adrian Robinson is no longer the JPP of tight ends. He is now the Nate Newton of tight ends.
Yeah, I just read that. That's a shame. Wow.
All right, Bam Bam. Appreciate it. I did not see that. When did that story come out? I have to check up on that.
Did you know,
on my social media.
Well, the story was he got arrested for 20 pounds of marijuana.
Oh, I did not see that.
In
okay.
Pennsylvania. So there's the Nate
so
Newton.
So that would
tight
explain.
There
yes.
You go.
That's why I was trying to understand the connection. I know who Nate Newton is, and I understand the backstory. I just didn't understand how it related to former Giants tenant Adrian Robinson. One other thing I wanted to add with respect to Ereck Flowers, Olivier Vernon spoke to the media yesterday and said, you know, they go back and forth in terms of giving each other tips on technique and so forth. And, you know, Vernon did commentate on the fact that he felt Flowers has improved in terms of his hands, which was one area that you mentioned he has been trying to work on it. You know, the other thing that I wanted to say, and I think you brought up a really good point, Mike Solari, who's a very well-polished offensive line coach. He's been around the league. He's worked with a variety of different offensive linemen. I was watching the individual drills between offensive linemen and defensive linemen the other day at practice, Jeff, and Solari, in between every single play, he stops, he gives direction. It doesn't matter whether you're a veteran. It doesn't matter whether you're a rookie. I mean, he was telling Richburg things. He was telling Justin Pugh things, Flowers, DJ Fluker when he came in. I mean, very meticulous. And even the subtle things about, you know, make sure your hands are here. You know, don't push off. Your feet were in the wrong spot. There's constant direction that's been given by Solari for every single offensive lineman.
And as many people, you know, you got to be a big guy to play offensive line. And big guys have to move quickly because defensive linemen have the advantage, okay? They're basically dictating where they're going to take you to go. But the fact is this, okay, offensive linemen, it's a very technical position to play, okay? And when you have good feet and bad hands, okay, a lot of times it's one or the other is going to be your default. So what I'm trying to say is that it's a very difficult position to play, especially a right or left tackle, because you do not have help on one side, okay, where you say you don't hear a lot about Pugh or Richburg. Well, those guys have a little bit more help inside, okay? There's a little bit more things going on. When you're out on an island like the tackles, your technique and your fundamentals become imperative. So you've got to work on those things. Not having good hands at being a tackle is a bad thing, because that your hands are an asset for you at a tackle position, okay? Because you have to be able to – you have nobody on your right or nobody on your left, and you've got to be able to have good hands. So Mike Solari is constantly telling these guys to do this or that. And really, there's a lot of things going on when you're trying to go against an Olivia Vernon or a JPP. And what happens is a lot of times you break down in your technique and fundamentals because the guy on the other side overcome – you got to stop him. But a lot of guys just cannot – they cannot rely, and they have a hard time saying, okay, my fundamentals will take care of a guy like this, all right? So it's a hard thing to work on, and that's what these practices are for. That's what these coaches do. These guys coach these guys up in the meeting rooms, on the field. They're constantly getting coached. I think it comes to a point where the player has to accept the coaching, and that's the biggest thing for me with Flowers is that, you know, will he accept the coaching? Any player – can just say, you know what, it's we call it in football terms, we call it coach talk. It's one ear and out the other. But somewhere there's got to be some substance in there where the guys have to really think about, hey, maybe this can work. A lot of veterans are hesitant to take coaching because they're veterans. You know, they've gotten
they're
here.
They're stuck in their ways.
Yeah, and so now, but a guy like Flowers, who's not, he's a veteran, but he's a young veteran. This is his third year. So he's got to change some things. And I say to anybody listening, or even to the last caller, give this some time to work on the things that he's been told he's got to get better on. They've only had three days of full padded practice, okay? That's not enough time to correct everything that you were working on in the offseason.
And I also think, as I mentioned earlier, I think it's extremely more telling when you go up against players that you're not seeing in practice every day. Because even if he is struggling here or there against Vernon and JPP, who is – it's a good test to go up against him. It's better to see, well, how does he react to somebody that he doesn't necessarily know the tendencies all the time, and he's only seeing on film as opposed to necessarily communicating constantly throughout the course of the game. Because I will tell you this, when you go up against Von Miller, let's say when they play the Denver Broncos, Von in between Downs is not going to say, Eric, you know, maybe if you put your hands up to the left or the right, you'll be able to stop
me. I got
me.
A coaching
that
point
happen.
For you.
Yeah, Vernon could do that. Von Miller's not doing that.
Yeah, no.
So that's why I think it's a much more better test to see how he responds to somebody like that. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Phil is in North Carolina. Phil, what do you have for us?
Yes, hi, guys. Question about the player personnel. I think that we took a down dip for that 5 years when maybe Mark Ross took the lead on college drafting, and Jerry took a step back, and now we seem to correct our drafting the last couple of years. But the one thing that seems to still stick out is the our mid rounds are below the average of hits. How can we correct that mid round, and particularly the linebacker player personnel gap that we seem to have?
I think it's. I really believe it's a crapshoot when you start getting those fourth through seventh round draft picks. I think for any team it is,
yeah.
And I just think that you hit on some of them, you hit on some of them, you don't. I don't think there's a perfect science to this, and I think that they just do the best they can to evaluating the player at the draft time and picking the guy. You know, once the guy's here, you're hoping that he takes to the system and that he's a guy that maybe you steal from the draft, you know. But the Giants certainly have had some guys in those middle rounds that haven't panned out, but every year it's a different circumstance. You just got to hope that you kind of go in there and maybe find yourself a guy that can play.
Yeah, I don't know the percentage off the top of my head, Phil, but I think that if you look across the NFL landscape, as Jeff mentioned, you're going to see a lot of teams that don't really strike gold in terms of picks 4 through 7. And also, if you go back the last few years, I'm sure a lot of those picks are not even on those teams as well. I think in recent history, though, I'm just looking at the Giants draft here. I mean, B.J. Goodson has an opportunity to be an impactful player this season. He was a fourth-round pick last year. Paul Perkins is in line to be a starter. He was a fifth-rounder. And Jarrell Adams has a chance to continue to develop and contribute. And then we'll see what happens with this year's class. It's way too early to tell. But, Avery Moss could be a rotational guy. We'll see if Wayne Goldman gains a role. And Adam Biznavati could be depth on the offensive line. But, I think last year's class, I think they made huge strides, Jeff, top to bottom. I mean, you're looking at every single one of those players could very well have a huge role this season on the roster.
Well, and again, like I said, it's a crapshoot. So, yeah. I mean, there's years where if you go back 5, 6, 7 years ago, some of those guys didn't pan out. But, it's just every year you kind of hope that the evaluation process is what it is. You rely on your scouts and putting your draft board together. There's nothing you can do about it. There really isn't. I mean, it's one organization's opinion on a player versus another organization's opinion on a player. You see it all the time where this team had him at a third rounder and this team had him as a fourth rounder. And then all of a sudden out of the blue, somebody says, well, this team has him as a second rounder. Well, it's the same guy. They're watching the same person. They have the same info on them. So how can one team think he's a second rounder and one team think he's a fourth rounder? Unless they have something from an injury standpoint or something that this philosophy, it also depends on the schemes. A 3-4 team versus a 4-3 team. Do they need a guy like this? So a lot of factors go into it. It's not a perfect science, but you kind of hope that it'll work for you. And from what Lance had just said, you look at the last year and the rookies coming in this year, you look like there's a lot of impact coming from your draft picks over the last 2 years.
Yeah, I am marketing on a gray curve, so to speak. So I am familiar with the overall success of mid rounds and how we stack up. And we definitely were below average, especially for that 5-year dip. But
sure.
The last 2 years do seem, as you point out, I'm hopeful the last 2 years. And I think it's really just Jerry getting more involved. So I think Jerry's forte is looking at a player. And translating that to the pro level. So I'm glad he's in. And the other comment I have is Dave Gettleman, I'll take this off the air. Dave Gettleman is a free agent now. I would like to see him back with the Giants. So if you can comment on that. And thank you very much, guys. Appreciate talking to you.
All right, Phil. Appreciate the phone call. Dave Bye. Gettleman, the former Carolina Panthers general manager who was let go a few weeks ago. Obviously, he was with the Giants organization for many years. There hasn't been any public comment, but whenever you have a previous tie to an organization, Jeff, I don't think it would be a surprise if perhaps there was a reunion of some sort, but I don't think there's been any indication that that's imminent, at least right now.
Yeah, and I think you just got to look at the situation where you're at in your organization. I mean, you don't just go out and just, you know, if there's not a hole to fill, you don't go and just find somebody. But you also have to look at the advantages and the disadvantages of bringing him back or not bringing him back. So, I mean, it's a guy that knows the organization. He knows football. He's an ex-GM on a team that was just, you know, three years ago, Super Bowl team?
I think it was two years ago.
2 years
actually,
ago,
yeah.
Okay, so obviously he's had a hand in. And listen, Dave Gettleman, when you talk about what we just did, about draft picks and things going, you know, Dave was around here 5 years ago, okay, and was here a long time before that. You know, had his hand in a lot of those other picks that we just talked about. So, you know, it's you look at the organization, you say, could we use a guy like that in a certain capacity? Obviously, he wouldn't be coming in here as any type of general manager, as we know that. But just to speculate on it would be silly. But I think that Dave has a brilliant mind of football. I don't know what his plans are, but you know, he'll be around football still.
Head back to the phone lines here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate everybody tuning in. Bash is in Ohio. Bash, what's happening?
Bash?
How are you doing, Lance? How are you doing, Jeff?
Hello, Bash.
Wonderful. Happy Friday, as we say.
I wanted to call in actually about what the previous caller called in about and put a little twist to it and wanted to ask about his draft. I see one with Mack could do as far as this team and looking down the roster and stuff, seeing as far as our 22 starters on both offense and defense that we went pretty young as far as and trusting in our draft picks that we have for the past few years. And I wanted to go into that as far as our late round draft picks like BJ and Paul and Ben Wadi getting some time and Jarrell Adams. And I wanted to go into as far as the draft 5-7 years ago, 10 years ago, as far as what it had to do with the coaching, because I know Jeff said a couple of weeks ago as far as Tom Coughlin not really playing rookies and not really playing late round draft picks, so was that going to as far as McAdoo trusting his young talent and giving him opportunities to play, and Tom just didn't do that. Tom didn't, his thing was old school mentality as far as playing veterans and not really giving rookies a chance. And was that going to as far as Jerry Reese's drafting, was it as far as due to coaching or more of the talent? I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I think it comes from school thoughts with your coach. I mean, you look at Ben McAdoo, you said it. McAdoo said last year in his first year as the head coach, I'm not afraid to play young players. Okay, so he obviously has a hand in the draft and which guys, you know, he puts his opinion in on some of these. But the guys that are drafted and the guys that are on the team, that's the hand you're dealt with. And he's going to say, listen, I believe in this young kid. I'll play him. I don't care. Where Tom was more of a veteran guy. He trusted the veterans more than he trusted rookies. And it also depends on the team. What is your makeup of your team? What is the goal and what is the future of your team? You look at a team like the Jets. Obviously, on paper, they're very, very young. They don't have a lot of people. They're going to be playing a boatload of young players, okay? This is a veteran team that you have here. You have a team that's coming off an 11-5 season with very high expectations in the division and within the organization. A lot of those younger players that are on this roster will get a chance to play in certain positions, but for the most part, you look at the offense and the defense and this 22 starters, not a lot of opportunities for young guys to jump into that lineup. I look at it probably as Tomlinson being one of them at the defensive tackle position, B.J. Goodson at the linebacking position. You got Darian Thompson, who is really – he's not a veteran, but he is a young guy. He hasn't been playing much on defense. Then you look at on offense – you're not looking at much. You're looking at Paul Perkins, a guy that's, you know, a very, very young player, didn't play much last year, but then the receiving position. So not a lot of areas for a young draft pick to bunch into this. Well, you look at Ingram, of course. Ingram's going to be a guy.
Yeah.
But my point is a lot of those third, fourth, fifth round draft guys are not going to be in the starting lineup this year.
Well, and that's why it really goes back to opportunity. If the opportunity is there when the kid gets drafted, in all likelihood, he's going to have more of an opportunity to get on the field. I think when you look at Tom Coughlin's tenure, and obviously, Jeff, you could shed more light because you actually played for Tom Coughlin, but I almost feel like the narrative is a bit misleading in just my personal opinion, because I go back to that 2007 class. Those guys played.
We had 10 rookies that year, and they all played.
And it wasn't as if, you know, Tom shied away from playing them.
Right.
They played. Now, part of it was because maybe somebody was hurt, so they were elevated and they were moved up the depth chart. But to say that Tom Coughlin never gave rookies an opportunity, to me, is a bit misleading. Because, I mean, I'm looking through even the drafts, and I could pick out guys that I know contributed when they were during their rookie campaign. And Steve Smith, who was a part of that 2007 draft class, if he doesn't get hurt, there's a chance that he has much more of an active role during the course of the regular season. He just unfortunately got hurt. So I think every rookie's got a different story as to why they chip in immediately or why they don't. David Wilson, for example, he played in that first game, but he did have fumbling issues.
Yeah.
So Tom decided to go back to the veteran. But then David Wilson played a huge role on special teams his rookie year and set all types of records.
Yeah.
So once again, I think you really got to look at each individual young player as opposed to just make bold generalizations that, well, this coach didn't like rookies and this coach loves rookies. I think there's a different story for everybody.
And there's a different story because they're all made up differently. They're wound up differently. And guys learn systems easier than others. And then there's also opportunity. Like you said, one guy gets hurt, he moves into the next spot. And you know what? And then he flourishes or he doesn't flourish. David Wilson is a prime example. They put him in there and he has fumbling issues. Tom Coughlin says, "You're out, bud. We're not going to take that." And, but you know, and never had a chance to get back in the lineup after his injury. So it's a whole different, I think that it's philosophy, it's opportunity. But the fact is that you're not drafting them to not play. You want the guys to come here and play. These are guys that are going to be on your team. You want them to certainly play. You don't want to just pay them to sit there and watch unless they have to.
Anything else for us, Bash?
I think
that was all.
All right, Bash.
Yes. All right, Bash. Appreciate
the
phone
call. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks so much for chiming in. All right, let's head back to the lines. We got Bob in Bloomfield. Bob, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I want to make a quick note. There's a lot going on, like a lot of the Giants fans calling in about their offensive line, but there's another element to that because so many times the running back plays a key role in rushing the football, and I think the last few years the Giants really haven't had that backwards vision. Rashad Jennings was more of a straight-on runner. With Paul Perkins, I had called last year, and I had a chance to see him play a lot at UCLA. He reminds me a lot of Tiki Barber. You know, I made that remark last year. I mean, he has to prove that in the coming years. But what my point is that with that kind of vision now coming out of the backfield, like say a zone block and the guy gets beat right to the six hole, he takes it to the four. A lot of times the running back has to see that, make a move, get up in the hole that's there sometimes. And I didn't see that the last couple of years with the Giants. Now with Perkins, I think Giant fans are going to be really pleased because I think he's going to bring that. Because if you look back, I'm in my 50s, you look back at Giant teams like Rodney Hampton, Tiki Barber, Ahmad Bradshaw, they played behind good linemen. But I wouldn't say all of them were the best in the league. But what they brought to enhance the line was great vision, great ability to cut. Tiki was special that way. I mean, he'd see something, get off of it, make something out of nothing. And I think that's been lacking, too, to be fair to the linemen. Because, you know, you look at a lot of the plays last year, they got blown up sometimes. The defensive guy got in the backfield and the back had no chance. But there were a lot of occasions where the back could have saw something a little different and ran directly into the back of the lineman and didn't gain a lot of yards. So I guess the question is, how is Paul Perkins looking? What have you guys seen? Or how do you feel about what I'm saying? I mean, do you feel the skilled players play a role too and not always just the offensive linemen? Sometimes the gap, the lineman isn't where you want him to be and you have a play going to the six hole and the lineman's there to defend the guy. And the back, you know, as our guy hits him, our back has to see that and get somewhere else. And that I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that in the last few years like you did with Tiki, Ahmad Bradshaw, Rodney Hampton was phenomenal. You know, so what do you think about that? How do you feel about that?
Well, it's interesting because one of the things that Ben McAdoo has commented on over the last few days is he's been trying to emphasize to the running backs that they have to be a bit more patient and they have to wait for the line to do its job and better see the hole open up and anticipate it, as opposed to be set that the play calls for you to go to the right, immediately go to the right. And I think that alludes to basically what you were talking about, Bob, in terms of patience by the running back and the decision-making and the vision by the running back is just as integral in terms of the blocking for the offensive line. I was impressed with Paul Perkins late last season. I think he gave us flashes that he's versatile. He could catch the ball out of the backfield, especially off of a few screen plays that they ran from him. He's very shifty compared to some of the other running backs that are on the depth chart. So I think that they're going to try to improve the utilization of Paul Perkins, not just necessarily have him as a first or second down back, maybe put him in on third down as a receiver and try to add to his arsenal of moves this season. So I think that is something that bodes well. But in fairness, I remember the Cincinnati Bengals game last year. And that was the game, Jeff, where they had to run the clock out late in the game. It was the Monday night game. And Rashad Jennings actually made some really impressive cutbacks in that game. Now, I think Paul Perkins is much more shiftier than Rashad Jennings. So they are two different running backs. But I use that game as an example to say that that's why I think struggles is a combination of many things. It's not just one element. But you could point to games even when you had a running back in there that wasn't the shiftiest guy, and he still found a way to maybe make up for when the blocking failed. And then there were times where also the offensive line came through and the running back maybe did not see the hole. So I think it's been a combination of those two factors, as opposed to saying it's definitely the running backs or it's definitely the offensive line.
I
feel like that's a great, you know, and that's how I feel. Like, vision to me is the most important thing for a back. Like you were saying, look at Pittsburgh. Look at Le'Veon Bell. I mean, he waits. I mean, they don't have, I mean, their line is okay. I don't think they're the best line in the NFL, but Bell makes them look awfully good because he's able to see things. And I think that Tiki brought that to us. I mean, he had vision that was just incredible. And he would see things that other people don't. And I'm hoping Perkins can bring that. Gallimore, the rookie, you know, bring that same type of thing. Because I think the line takes some heat a lot of times. That isn't fair. Even Eli has to step up a little better this year. I was listening to McAdoo at the end of last year. I mean, Flowers got beat sometimes. But sometimes Manning could have stepped up a step into the pocket a little better, instead of just dumping the ball to the ground, you know. So I think it plays a role. Skilled players, I agree with you, man. I think it's both assets got to contribute. And I like what the Giants did. I like the sixth-round pick out of Pitt. I think he's going to compete. But one other question I'll let you go. I want to know if you guys can answer this. If not, maybe you could find out because you actually get to talk to the players. DJ Fluker comes out of San Diego, right? He makes the all-rookie team in 2013 as a right tackle, 2014, both years. He plays right tackle. He grades in the high 70s. Has two great years because I was a big fan of his at Alabama. They move him to right guard in 2015. I was wondering, do you know why they did that? Did they move their left tackle to right and draft the left tackle? Because I can't understand after having two good seasons. I think it blew his mindset a little bit going to guard, and he was never the same at guard. Do you know why San Diego moved him after two very good years in 2013 and 14 at tackle? And do you think the Giants will give him a shot back at right tackle where maybe he really feels more comfortable?
All right, Bob. Appreciate the phone call.
I don't know what happened. I guess my question is that what you determine as two really good years at left tackle. It could have been okay, and then, you know, maybe they thought he would be a better. He's a big dude. I can tell you. To me, I imagine him as a guard more than a tackle, just because of his size. But, you know, as far as here, I think he's going to be competing with John Jerry at right tackle. Excuse me, at right guard. I think that Bobby Hart is going to be your right tackle. And I think that he'll be, along with Biznawati, will be your swing guys that can play right tackle, guard, you know, whatever you need them. But, you know, right now you're stuck with the five guys that were in their lineup last year. And maybe we just hit on a point on that running game. You know, you talk about guys like Tiki Barber. If you remember Tiki Barber, and I do certainly because he was a teammate of mine, that he had great vision, but he also had impeccable patience. And you hit the nail on the head when you talk about running backs and being patient. A lot of these young guys, because of the speed of the game, they don't practice patience because they get to the NFL and they see these holes come and go so quickly. They think that they got to get the ball and just hit it as quickly as you can. I think it's impressive to me when I look at Bell play that position. He just sits back there and dances, and then he waits for a hole, and his explosion through it, it's 6 yards, it's 7 yards. I'm not saying that that's what Perkins has to do, but I am saying that you have to – it's a timing play. You run plays over and over and over because it's a timing thing. It's a timing play with the quarterback, his footwork. It's a timing play with the receivers and breaking off their routes and doing this. The running backs taking the ball, letting the guard pull, letting the guy get out in front of the – up on the linebacker. It's all about timing. If you have a little bit of impatience as a running back, you're going to be running up right up to the into the back of a lineman where the hole is just about ready to open up, and it's a dead play. So I think that patience is something that young guys have to get used to, because the speed of the game doesn't mean you have to go faster. It just, you have to play smarter. And I think that all of the running backs have vision. They wouldn't be a running back if they didn't. I think if you just compile the two, the patience and the vision, let them work for you, and it'll be good. I've said this before. I think that because of the personnel you're going to have on the field, and the Giants were at 92 or 93% 11 personnel last year, I see them still being in that 11 personnel in the mid-80s this year. That's my guess. But the fact is that that's going to help the running game, because you have three guys in this lineup that have to be respected. You got Shepard and Marshall and OBJ and Ingram. Okay, you're not going to see the Giants' defense, the opponents coming in with six and seven guys in the box anymore. So that's going to help the running game. But I think that the caller made a good point, is that it's not always on the lineman. Sometimes it's on the running back, too.
Well, the NFL's a complicated game. Football's a complicated game. There's so many facets. To simplify everything and say it's just one thing in particular, I think is a bit misleading. I wanted to add to what you were commenting about DJ Fluker. McAdoo mentioned that they view him now as a right side offensive lineman.
Right side.
Initially, it was
He's
more
a right
just a guard.
Side.
Now it's a right side. Yeah. But the thing is, until we really see him take reps at tackle, I think it's pure speculation. As you mentioned, we've seen guard reps. We've seen him shuffling in and out with Jerry. When they perhaps, if they're thinking about throwing him out of tackle, then maybe we could start to talk about if the Giants actually envision him there. As far as the last caller's question about why things change for DJ Fluker in San Diego, I think to say that there were two solid years, that's just in the eye of the beholder.
Well, that's
everybody's
what I was saying.
Gonna have,
yeah.
And you hit it right on the nose, Jeff. Listen, one guy's going to watch him say that those were two solid years. Other people are going to watch him. They're going to say it's different. And I'm not big on rankings and Pro Football Focus and all of these different numbers, because the eye test is so important, as you well know, Jeff, when you evaluate football players. There was early in his career, that season when he was at right tackle, where he gave up 7 sacks and 36 hurries. And those are, you know, realistic statistics that happened. And that was when the Chargers, I think, reevaluated their offensive line and decided to move him to right guard, to answer your question. They brought in Joe Barksdale as a free agent, who had more experience at tackle, and their plan was, we're going to move him the right tackle, we're going to move Fluker inside. So I think part of it was performance. I think part of it was the other personnel they brought in. And the other thing you have to understand is the Chargers had mega issues with their offensive line over that period of time. And this is not Fluker. I'm talking about across the board. They had injury issues. They had performance issues, lack of a running game. So they were constantly toying with who's a good fit where. And I think Fluker got thrown into that as a result of just the entire offensive line, not necessarily just because of him. But once again, you know, when we evaluate and we say these were two good seasons, these were two bad seasons, those opinions are going to vary, Jeff.
Of course. That's why, you know, that. Listen, the Giants' bottom line here is that the Giants see him as a right side player. And like I said, he's competing with John Jerry at the right guard position right now. And I think that Biznadoe is going to be the guy that's competing with the right tackle position. That's the way it's working. So until then, until the end of this preseason, we're going to know. But I think the fact is that that's where Fluker can play. And he also can play, you know, he's a veteran. He can play right tackle if you needed him to. But right now, it's Bobby Hart's job to lose at that right tackle position.
I'm just so caught up in how you pronounce the rookie.
Biznadoe? What the heck? How do you pronounce his name?
Sorry.
I'm just going to call him
Biz. You called him Biznadoe or whatever?
Bizawadi.
Biznabadi.
From this point on.
Odigizuwa came in. Remember that? Yeah. Remember that season?
Listen,
that's going to be your project this season. Biznabadi.
I'm just going to call him Biz.
you know what? I'd like that. Just call
just
him
like
Biz.
Just like 00. Biz.
He's all Biz. He's all Biz. Adam
folks,
is all Biz, period.
If you've been watching this show long enough, you know that I butcher names. And I will continue to butcher his name. So I'm now going to go to Biz. So do not call into the show and say, man, who are you talking about when you say Biz? We now know who am I talking
about? Not business.
What's his name?
You're talking about Adam Biznavati.
Biznavati.
Yes.
It's not that difficult of a word.
You managed to add two extra syllables to his name. That takes a lot of talent, Jeff.
Biznavati.
Biznavati.
No, I'm going to call him Biz in a while.
Biz, but call him Biz. I like that. Yeah. All right, let's head back to the phone lines here. We got Hudson in Brooklyn. Hudson, what's happening?
Hudson.
Hey, Lance. Hey, Jeff. How we doing?
Doing well.
We're doing good. I'm glad I can pronounce your name.
All right.
Yes.
You know, I have a couple questions about Flowers. I know he spent the whole offseason at the facility. Were the coaches, the offensive line coaches, allowed to work with him? For his technique?
No. There's limitations in the offseason.
That's what I was telling you. That's what I was saying earlier, is that the stuff that he has been told to work on, he has not been able to work on it, one, going live with players, and two, having the coach there to overemphasize the corrections that he's been trying to make.
Okay. So my second question on that, during the exit meetings at the end of the season, are the coaches allowed to tell the players what to do to work on their game for next season? Like, would the coach be allowed to tell Flowers, listen, we want you to go to that O-line camp to work on your technique?
Sure. They can say whatever they want to say in the exit interview. They can tell you, you know, we're not happy with the way you played and you need to get better or you're not going to be around here any longer. I mean, that's really good.
Can they suggest, like, or tell, would he be able to tell Flowers, listen, we want you to go to this camp?
Sure.
Improve your technique?
They can tell him that, whether he's going to do it or not. That's another you know.
Okay.
But, listen, the coaches are going to try to do everything they can to improve the player or players at their position that they coach. Okay? So it's whether if, you know, if a guy needs to get quicker on his feet, you know, they're going to recommend some things to do in the offseason, and it may be a camp that you go to here or there. But the fact that, to answer your question earlier, is that the coaches have no – they can't coach these guys in the offseason. They can't even coach him in the off-season workout program starting in April. They're not allowed to be around him. So that's because that just got abused years ago. The guys would come into the weight room to work out, and then the coach would grab them and say, hey, let's just go in here. I want to show you a couple
of
things.
Yeah, let's watch film. Yeah.
You know, next thing you know, the players are in there an hour, and they don't have anybody to complain to, and finally it got caught up. It just at one point it was like, we can't do this anymore. So it actually hurts the development of young guys like Flowers and some of the other players, is that the players can't, you know, there's a rule now too, that you're only allowed to be on the field for so long. So as soon as that whistle blows at the end of practice, years ago, the coaches would spend a half hour in your position working on certain things after practice. You have to be off the field by no more than 1 minute after you're done. The players can stay after, but the coaches cannot. Because coaches are crazy. They'll coach you until the cows come home.
Especially if a player is willing to
do that.
There's
no question. Yeah.
Welcome to the collective bargaining agreement.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to make one more comment about the defense. By looking at the clips in training camp and the return of Thompson at safety, the improvement of Eli at the cornerback, and what I think, in my opinion, is an upgrade at defensive tackle from Hankins, because I don't think he was a natural three tech. I think these three techs we have now battling for the starting position, I think they're all better penetrators than Hankins, and I think they'll be a better complement to Harrison. So I think with all of those factors, including Goodson looking like he's a monster out there, I think the defense is actually going to improve.
Well, I think that's an interesting observation on your part. I mean, as far as the penetration from those other players that they're rotating in, I think that remains to be seen. As I mentioned, I think Robert Thomas has the potential, and I think we've seen flashes of it. You know, with Jonathan Hankins, as far as penetration was concerned, Hudson, and appreciate the phone call. We want to try to squeeze in a few more. before we wrap up the program. You know, Hankins, if you look back on his career, Jeff, he had that 7-sack season, but outside of that, it was hit or miss. So yeah. it was hard to really get a feel of consistency in terms of Jonathan Hankins. Now, sacks is not the only indication that a player is getting good penetration. Let's be fair. You could be getting penetration, you're just not getting there to record the sack.
Right.
But a lot of people get caught up in, they're like, well, if a player gets 7 sacks one season, I would expect to get near or close to that the following season. And that didn't happen for Hankins, and part of that was also the injury bug.
Injury bug, and the team saw he had 7 sacks the year before, so they game planned around him. So, but yeah. What makes you a good player, a Pro Bowl player like Snacks, is a guy, an all-pro, that can overcome those game plan situations where, okay, I know I'm getting double team, but now I got to split the double team. I got to play better. I got to look at ways to get better. He may not have seen him as a three-tech guy, but I think that, you know, the guys that we have, the Giants have here now, fit the mold for that. And I think that it's soon enough you're going to see, you know, these guys come in. I like Tomlinson a lot. I like his size. I like that where he came from, Alabama. I think he played in, you know, basically the junior NFL league over there in the SEC, and I think that this guy is pretty much battle tested from a competition standpoint. I think he's going to win the job. I honestly do.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We're going to stick with the Brooklyn theme. Joe is in Brooklyn. Joe, what's happening?
Hello, Joe.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thanks for making it, Joe. What do you got for us?
I had a question about the linebackers. You know, we're hearing a lot of good things in terms of physicality, but is there anything new going on in terms of coverage? I mean, I know B.J. Goodson is very physical, but we haven't really seen any clips of him in coverage. And also, I had a question about Calvin Munson. I know he's a long shot to see, you know, the starting team, but how's he doing? I haven't heard anything about him.
Well, I think I'll talk about the coverage aspects of it. You know, Keenan Robinson is a guy that will come in on third down and play that position. So, you know, it's time will tell as far as Goodson being a three-down player. I think we've seen the reemergence of the three-safety look out of Spags here the last couple of days. We've seen some of that. So that may take care of some of the coverage responsibilities out of that linebacker position. I got to see, you know, where the depth is and who the guys behind Goodson that can cover. I just think it's all about personnel. And listen, they will know if B.J. Goodson can be a third down player soon enough. If he can't, then they'll make the adjustments. So, and then as far as Munson, I haven't heard much about him either.
Yeah, I have not heard much about him either. I would say of the guys that are maybe long shots, I think to me, as I look over the linebacker list, Eric Pinkins to me has maybe flashed or stood out. And part of that is because normally he's been in the mix of
every fight
some
is.
Extracurricular activities. So I don't know necessarily that's good or bad, but I guess his toughness, he's been in the thick of things. If you want to look at some of those unknown non-household names at the linebacker position, I'd probably throw out Pinkins before I throw out Munson.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And he's also a veteran. Pinkins is a veteran guy.
Yeah. A little bit more experience.
And maybe if his ability isn't that great, at least he's maybe trying to make some presence with his physicality and
yes.
being around
well,
a tough guy.
And sometimes that's how you make a name for yourself,
well,
where you don't shy away from contact or at least interactions with you or your teammates. I think when you talk about coverage, and we were talking about this with Goodson earlier in the program, you know, a lot of it comes down to the games. I mean, even if you see it a little bit where they run down the field, you never really get a good indication about whether or not they could be effective in a game if they have to line up against a tight end or something like that.
Well, I look at all three of the linebackers that are pegged in to be the starters. I don't think all three of them are exceptionally good in coverage to begin with. So I think, you know, look at Castillas and then you look at Kennard. You know, these are two guys that, you know, they're okay in coverage. They're not the greatest. So I do see that there's going to be a lot of rotation in that linebacking position on throwing situations.
Yeah, if anything, Keenan Robinson's the guy that stands out when it comes to coverage.
Well, there's no question. I think that's why they brought him back, and I think they want him to play that position. Right now he's in the concussion protocol, but, you know, he'll be back, and I think that he's definitely a guy that you're going to see in there a lot. He had a lot of reps in there last year at that.
Joe, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in, as that is going to wrap up things here for us today.
Wow, things, time goes
by. It does fly by, indeed. I just want to take a quick glance at Twitter to see if anybody else has weighed in on a variety of topics that we delved into, and then we will wrap up shop. We want to give people an opportunity who may not be able to get to a phone during the course of the program. So let's just take a quick glance at that. We've got a few bold predictions I see people continuing to throw out. That was a big theme on our program in terms of what people think is going to happen. We'll throw out one here from Frank the Tank at RomoCop74. Can you guys give some insight as to how Pau does against press coverage? We have seen others do well in practice until press coverage. Well, you know what? There's also limited opportunities to see how they do in press coverage, too, I think, based on how the drills are. So, I mean, I'm going to reserve judgment until I see a little bit more of what takes place in the games. I think Pau's done a nice job. He understands the system. He was here during the course of last season because he was on the practice squad, so he's familiar with respect to that. But as far as press coverage goes, to me, I still need to see a game before I'm to rush to judgment to say what's going to happen.
And I also agree that, you know, when he's in there, he's up against the second, third guy.
More of a reason why. I mean, he's not going up against DRC and Eli Apple and Janoris Jenkins. So, I mean, even if we were to say, hey, a few plays here or there, he did a nice job, I still think you need to see what happens in a game and a player that he's unfamiliar with. So we'll try to answer a few more tweets off the air, but do appreciate everybody for tuning in. Big Blue Kickoff Live up and running again on Monday all week long at 10 a.m. Eastern as we continue to get you set for the ins and outs of training camp. For Jeff Eagles, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Friday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.